Good morning. Good morning. Beautiful day out there. I hope you're able to enjoy it. Happy Monday. Happy Monday. Of course, our thoughts and prayers go out to Sean Oliver and his whole family. They're burying his grandmother today. Had the opportunity to meet her a couple times. I know she was really proud of her grandson, Sean. Of course, he's running for lieutenant governor, but is an elected member of the city council. And so I consider Sean a friend. And I think most people that meet him for a little while feel the same way I do. I mean, he's a really good guy. And but death is part of life. And we got to bury our relatives. So it's not the first person Sean's had close to him die, but this one, I think, really hurts. So our thoughts and prayers go out to Sean Oliver. You know, they're burying her today. So, and it's a lovely day for it, really. If it can be a lovely day for it, you'd like to always hope for the best of weather. And so, mercifully, Sean has that and his family has that. Okay. Friday, I was at the district attorney's celebration of seniors. Saw a lot of you. Thank you for coming up and saying hello. It's always a pleasure to meet people who listen to the program daily. And without you, there'd be no me. So I really do appreciate it. And we don't have to agree on everything. That's not what life is about. So the district attorney's event, which is all captured in a podcast, available for free. We had an opportunity to talk for a little while with District Attorney Tom Quinn about two of the big stories happening now. One, of course, is the unbelievable, tragic loss of the 5-year-old Pinheiro child up there in the Sassaquin area at his grandparents' house. And a small child killed by a car, but also, you know, by the little boy's own actions. It's, you know, we're not blaming the kid, obviously. Little kids are impulsive. They're learning everything all the time. And very hard to control. So I want to thank all those businesses in Acushnet Creamery, a Blue Point restaurant. There's a lot of other Captain's Place, a lot of other restaurants. It'll be running through Thursday. I know Michael Rock put a video up. They're going to donate a portion of their proceeds through Thursday to the family, the Pinheiro family, that lost the little 5-year-old boy. He was on his tricycle. For those of you who don't know the story, on his tricycle in Sassaquin, came down the driveway into the road, and he hit, my understanding anyway, the little boy. He's on a tricycle. They don't have any real controls, and certainly a 5-year-old's not expected to really have any controls. He ran into the back of the moving landscaping truck and suffered catastrophic injuries. So the district attorney and I talked about that. And I don't believe, from what I'm hearing, there'll be any charges for anybody. But it's just such a senseless tragedy and likely not preventable. I know everybody involved will feel guilty about it, but from what I understand, it's basically unpreventable. Unless you're going to put children in cages, right? No, you're not going to do that. Children have to have freedom to explore, to learn, and accidents do happen. Sadly, they do happen. At the other end of the spectrum, we talked with the district attorney about this hellacious crime in Fall River, where And by the way, somebody pointed it out to me, and I've been seeing it ever since. The suspect's wearing headphones. That's a translator. Okay? Meaning my sense that this didn't appear to be to me an American crime. It happened in America, but it didn't strike me as something of an American nature. A pitchfork. First of all, a cobblestone used to destroy someone's cranium. They crush their head in with a cobblestone. And the pitchfork to the back of a head, driven into the skull. Those didn't strike me as American-ish crimes. Right? So anyway, then one of the callers pointed out to me, did you see the headphones on the suspect's head when he was arraigned? And I hadn't noticed it. And of course, that is the translator. The translator. So, a lot of crime in Bristol County, or potential crimes, right? I don't think the five-year-old will end up being a crime. Just a sad story. But all those sad stories go across the district attorney's desk. Now, back to the major issues in the world. The Iranian deal. Hey, look, I didn't like when Obama made a deal. I'm not sure with Donald Trump's deal. Remember, the Iranians are the other half of the deal. Do you believe the Iranians, the leadership, who've been at war with us since 1979, right, when the Islamic Revolution took over Iran? Do you really think they're going to pay attention to what's on a piece of paper? I don't think so. So, as honorable as the United States is, a deal with the Iranians requires them to be honorable, too, to honor the deal. So whether it's President Obama doing a deal or Donald Trump doing the deal, I'm not optimistic that the Iranians are going to live to the letter of the law, live to the letter of the deal. I just do not believe they will do that. And how did they have all that nuclear dust, all that nuclear material for a bomb if they weren't really working on one, right? I mean, come on. I think that President Obama, his team, I heard Wendy Sherman on over the weekend. She was one of the negotiators. She's a social worker who climbed up through the State Department and politics to be one of the negotiators, first with North Korea and then with the Iranians on nuclear material. I heard Wendy Sherman on this weekend and trying to salvage Obama's reputation and saying that it'll be fundamentally the same deal that Obama got from the Iranians and Trump ripped up. And all I could think to myself is, in a couple of years, there'll be some former Trump official trying to explain why they cut a good deal. I happen to believe no deal of a good nature for America and for Western civilization is possible from the Iranians. That's why I was all for the military strikes on the Iranians. I say you've got to absolutely bomb them into submission. Totally. Totally. It's what we had to do to Germany. It's what we had to do to Japan. And I believe it's what is going to be called for with Iran. Quite frankly, I think it was always called for. I think Ronald Reagan I didn't vote in that election. I was too young. But Ronald Reagan was elected in part to deal with Iran. So, And he did not. Okay? He didn't. And I love Reagan, but he, in my opinion, didn't do what he should have done. Now, I don't have all the information that President Obama, President Reagan, President Trump have. I'm a talk show host. But I've watched these guys for my entire life, basically. And I don't think they're people you can negotiate with. I think you gotta kill them. 508-996-0500. Of course, we also got the city budget. We're coming up on cut night. We'll be joined by Leo Choquette in a few minutes to talk about what his plans are. Of course, he represents Ward 1. So we'll be joined by Leo Choquette here in a moment. Mack Auto Sales, a family-owned business in the city of New Bedford, located right on Rivet Street. Mack Auto Sales repairs all makes and models of automobiles. So if you need to get your car in there for a tune-up to make it last longer, we all do. Or you just want to get your car ready for the coming really hot weather, call and make an appointment today at 508-565-6221. They're open weekdays 9 to 5, including today to make an appointment. You're driving a foreign car, perfect. Mack Auto Sales specializes in servicing foreign-made automobiles. They also do a great job with American-made. Mention WBSM, they'll give you a nice break on the bill. Ask about their aftermarket accessories and the quality used cars for sale. We're going to take, it'll be a very short break. We'll be back. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll be joined by City Council Leo Choquette. Stick around.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Welcome back. It's a beautiful Monday morning. We're talking about anything that's on your mind. I got a number of people on hold. But most importantly, we have Ward 1 City Councilor Leo Choquette. Good morning, Councilor. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, sir. Good morning, Chris. Good morning, everybody out there. It's a beautiful morning today. Nice weather. I'm on my way up to my other office up in Braintree, so I just wanted to, give you a quick call, let you know. We got our budget cuts in over the weekend, and it's been a long weekend. We all the council has put in a lot of effort on this, and
what about the firehouse, Leo?
Yeah, I'm glad to say that at least from my perspective, we so far on paper, we've been able to make enough projected cuts that we should be able to save the fire station. Myself, Councilor Abreu, we compared notes and we came up with very similar figures as far as what we submitted for cuts. Well, over $1 million in cuts, which when you pair that with the $500,000 provided, thankfully, by Senator Montigny, I mean, there's more than enough money there to keep the fire station open.
We're speaking with Leo Choquette. Of course, he represents Ward 1. Leo, what are you sacrificing in terms of services, maybe nothing, to come up with this money to save the firehouse, at least on paper?
Yeah, so really all it is mostly travel budgets. A few other, maybe like two or three positions on paper. Nothing that is, high level. It's just some money that we found in different departments that we had spoken to different department heads, and they had said that, if you're going to cut something, we have something here, cut 50,000 here, 25,000 there.
Leo, I recognize that this is like routine to you, but my audience, it's not. Could you give us a little more specific information?
Well, again, it's mostly travel.
Okay.
Some capital outlay in some of the other departments. Again, it's just mostly money that, these other department heads said if you're going to cut something, you know, we can go with that.
So what do you think? Do you think you have enough money to change the direction of what happens to the Tarquin Hill Fire Station and the employees up there?
I do. So we were told it would be about $1.5 million is what the amount of money was what the mayor cut to, you know, cut the fire station. So by cutting that in another place, because again, you know, as city councilors, we can't add money, right? So all we can do is cut that same amount of money, that $1.5 million, from other places in the budget, add it together, and then, you know, it gets presented to Mayor Mitchell, and then he makes the final call, whether he wants to use that or not. So, you know, obviously next Monday night we'll be meeting. I believe I have more than enough votes to make my cuts. I mean, I might not get every cut that I'm proposing, but Councilor Abreu has a few different ones, and I'm sure Councilor Oliver has a few different ones, and Councilor Lopes and everybody else on the council. So I'm very, very certain that we will have enough to cut to give to the mayor so that he can apply it and keep the fire station open. And that is, as I've said like a thousand times now, that's my most important goal in this budget session, is to make sure there's enough money to keep the fire station open. Public safety is the most important reason for city government to exist.
Exactly.
Everything else is secondary, in my opinion.
Leo Choquette, of course, represents Ward 1. Leo, my question is, and I'm not asking you to have an answer, but you could guess, why wasn't the mayor and his staff able to come up with these cuts, but you and other members of the council, in fact, Councilor Abreu, were able to? Were they that difficult?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's certain layers to the onion, right? I mean, there's certain easy cuts you make. The mayor looks at the budget. Look, the mayor's an intelligent guy. We all know that. Highly educated man, very seasoned. And him and his staff, they go through and they look at what are the obvious cuts they can make. And then it becomes increasingly more difficult as you get, you know, deeper and deeper. And they're going to leave something for us to cut. I mean, it's just stuff that they probably didn't want to have to cut. I'm pretty sure he didn't want to have to cut everybody's travel budget, right? But it's there. And when you weigh it, I mean, everything I did, Chris, as far as looking at what to cut, I kind of weighed on almost like on the scale of justice there, you know, the fire station versus this, the fire station versus that.
Sure.
And I mean, obviously in almost every situation, the fire station won. I mean, I'm glad that I didn't have to propose cuts more than maybe one or two positions, because I don't want anybody to lose their jobs if they don't have to, right? But at the end of the day, I'm confident that I put together the best possible package, as I believe Councilor Abreu feels the same way, and Councilor Oliver, Councilor Pemberton, you know, the capo regime, as one of your callers said one time, they called us the capo, which I think that's such a great name. If they called us the Copa, I don't know if I'd like it as much, like Copacabana.
Yes.
But the capo, I just like the ring of that. But anyway, all kidding aside, I mean, right, this is a very serious, and I have, you know, I've lost a lot of sleep. So, I mean, today, you know, you're getting more of my changeup than my fastball. I'm a little out of the, you know, a little tired here today. I'm having a couple cups of coffee, so that's why I'm rambling here. But I just wanted to give you something to go on.
Yeah, and, no, I appreciate it.
Your listeners are very interested, but the important thing is that I believe we're providing the mayor with something he can work with to keep the fire station open. Now, again, that falls on him. And he's the mayor. He's the full-time, you know, boss of the city. And it comes down to what he is willing to do. I sincerely hope that he takes this seriously and goes with these cuts and applies the money to the fire station to keep it open, because nothing else is more important, really, especially to my people in Ward 1 and to Councilor Pemberton in Ward 2.
Yeah, no, that's a major piece in the infrastructure for public safety in the north end of New Bedford. Leo, the other positions that you and your colleagues are looking to cut to keep the fire station open, are they actual filled positions today, or are they just budget predictions for something they'd like to fill?
I believe one of them is a budget position that they're predicting and they'd like to fill. One of them is a real job. Now, just because I'm proposing it doesn't mean it's going to get enough traction. And that's why I don't want to say which position it is, because it could be somebody who's listening, and I don't want to unnecessarily upset somebody.
Undoubtedly, they're listening. They're listening.
Yeah.
There's no question they're listening, Leo. You know that. The entire City Hall is listening, not just here, but also in Fall River. So you ran these cuts by your colleagues, so you think you have the critical majority?
Yes, I ran them by at least six people. I mean, I couldn't get a hold of everybody on the council. But again, you know, when you work with these individuals, even the ones that maybe you don't get along with very well, and I really can't say there's anybody in the council I don't get along with, but what a relief in that difference in a year makes, right? But
yes,
this council, you kind of get used to how folks vote, and you get a feel working in close contact with all these people as to, you know, you can almost predict sometimes how they're going to react. Not always, right? Not always. But So I talked to six other councilors, and the other four that I didn't talk to, I'm pretty sure that, you know, they'd be on board. It's not, you know, it's nothing radical that we're looking to cut. So in order to keep a fire station open, which is the most important fire station in the North End, you know, I mean, I would assume all the at-large councilors would be on board, as far as the ones I didn't talk to. And, you know, no ward councilor wants to see another ward lose fire coverage. So this is, I'm pretty sure it's a sure thing. And you know, again, without having spoken to everybody, I can't vouch for everyone, and I don't want to do that.
Right. But no, I get that.
I know all my fellow councilors are good people, and they, you know, they're going to do what they can.
Look, we all know that one of the major forces on that council is Sean Oliver. And you've got him with you?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, that is excellent.
The capo.
So, Leo.
Joquette, Abreu, Pemberton, Oliver, right? Isn't that how that one goes?
So, we're talking with Leo Choquette, Ward 1 City Council. Leo, you had a big victory. The mayor had a big victory. Democracy had a big victory. The recall, my understanding, was passed by the city council.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Yeah, so we got that through. It is a great victory. Now, we had one councilor, Councilor Roy, who wanted to make it a little bit easier to pass the requirements in order for, you know, to initiate. So that's why it was a 10-to-1 vote. It wasn't that Councilor Roy didn't want it to pass. He wanted it to be a little easier on top of it from the current requirements.
And, so in other words, he wanted activists not to have to get as many signatures as the mayor did, type of thing.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right, well, I can
correct.
Understand that.
Yeah, and I'm not faulting him for that. I mean, I seconded one of his motions. I was the only person to second one of his motions so that he had the ability to speak, because look, last year I was the king of the 1-to-10 vote. So I know how it feels to bring something up and to, you know, not get support. Fortunately, that was last year, not this year, but I felt like he deserved the right to speak, and I wanted to second his motion so that he could explain his position. And, you know, that was that.
No,
so
now the recall, the mayor will sign it, we would assume, if maybe he already has. I don't know on what the format is on that. But that's a major victory.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Thank you, Chris. And it's something that's been around for quite a while. It feels good to get it done because I think we were letting down the voters by having it sit there. Look, I know that I had said on the radio like maybe 2 weeks ago that I wasn't going to vote for it or whatever. But, you know, I swallowed my pride and I decided that, you know, I have to do what's right for the people in this city. It's not about me. It's about them.
Right.
And the people in the city deserve that recall petition to be in place, obviously. And you know, it's I'm glad we could get it done.
Yes.
You know,
Glad we could get it done. I'm glad, Leo, we got it done because it's a very important tool for the residents of the city that you hope they never have to use. But it's like owning a firearm, right? You hope you never have to use it. But when you have it, if you need to use it, it's great to have.
Correct. It's peace of mind.
Yeah.
Right. That's all it comes down to.
You never know. Yep. Leo, listen, I really appreciate it. What else is coming up that people in the city should be paying attention to?
Well, I mean, we got our budget cut night next Monday and, you know, a couple of meetings this week. I don't have the schedule in front of me. But I, you know, we have it written down. And then again, we got vacation coming up on July 1st. I'm looking forward to going to New Hampshire personally just to get some time off for a couple of days, 4th of July.
Watch out.
The nation's 250th.
Don't get your picture taken buying alcohol up there, bringing it back, the tax-free alcohol up there. That stings a lot of Massachusetts, particularly southeastern Mass politicians like yourself, although I know you wouldn't do that, Leo. Leo, listen, I really appreciate it, and thank you for staying the course and getting that recall passed, even if it hurts you a little bit. In the end, it's good for democracy, right?
Absolutely.
All right, thanks,
thank
Leo.
You, Chris.
Thank you. Have a great day. Safe driving. 508-996-0500. So there we go. Leo Choquette and his colleagues, he mentioned Ian Abreu, Sean Oliver, have found enough money, Scott Pemberton, in the budget, combined with Senator Montigny's one-time infusion of $500,000 earmarked for the North End Station to keep the Tarquin Hill Fire Station open. So we'll see what the mayor does next on that. And I know the mayor is talking about big structural stuff, not just one-time money. But we'll have the mayor here on Wednesday. 508-996-0500. That's how you can get on the air. We're going to take a break and then we'll be right back. Stick around.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
This hour is brought to you by the cold beer and the world's best chicken wings at Rose Alley Ale House in downtown New Bedford. Good day to sit on the deck at Rose Alley Ale House. We're now joined by Elizabeth Dion. She's been here before. She's a selectman up in the North Shore, town of Belmont, and she's a really accomplished attorney, really wonderful woman, mom as well, married with children, but she's running to be our state treasurer. She's the Republican nominee for treasurer, and we got some big news. If you're a state employee, a retired teacher, a gonna-be-retired teacher, state employee, Elizabeth's got some important news about your pension. Good morning. Thanks for holding, Elizabeth. I appreciate it.
Hey, Chris. A pleasure to be back with you. Thank you for having me on. I want to start by thanking two of our public workers unions, the SEIU and NAGE, because what is going on is egregious, and it hurts state workers. It hurts taxpayers. And we really need their help to highlight this threat to the state pension fund. So I just want to start it. I want to give a shout out to the union.
Sure.
Because it's really important that they raise this issue for us. So to explain, stepping back, one of the things that I say about the treasurer frequently is it's the most powerful job in Massachusetts that people don't know enough about.
Right.
And that's why I'm running to be the taxpayer's treasurer. And what is going on right now, the money grab on Beacon Hill, is exactly why we need voters to fire to hire me because nobody's watching the fox in the hen house right now. So to explain what happened, the governor has proposed something called the Mass Wins Act, which is a ridiculous name because mass doesn't win. The state workers lose, the taxpayers lose, but the politicians win. Mm-hmm. And what she has proposed is there's a $120 billion state pension fund, and that's one of the many things the treasurer oversees is this pension fund. It really matters because state workers don't get Social Security. All they get is this pension fund. And if it's not fully funded, either they go without or taxpayers have to make up the difference. And right now there's a $33 billion hole in this $121 billion pension fund that every retired state worker relies on mm-hmm. and that we as taxpayers have promised they would receive. So the governor wants to take $100 million from this fund and have it available to give to her cronies or her favored companies. So the only people who win are the politicians and their cronies. And the unions are upset. I'm upset. Every taxpayer should be upset.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Dion. She's the Republican nominee for state treasurer. You're going to see her on the ballot in November. So, Elizabeth, explain to people what your credentials are and the fact that this is an unbelievable power grab that jeopardizes all these loyal, quite frankly, loyal Democrats' votes, teachers, public employees, and their union leadership has even disagreed with the governor who they endorsed. Yes. Talk about your credentials, though, Elizabeth, to be state treasurer.
So I have spent the last 10 years as a local elected official in Belmont, where I gained a reputation as a relentless reformer. I worked across the aisle because local government issues are nonpartisan or bipartisan. Potholes aren't red or blue. They just want to be fixed. Right. So I worked hard for 10 years. First town meeting, then the finance committee, then as chair of the community preservation committee, and then as a select board member, where as chair I enacted a lot of financial and spending reforms. One of those reforms that took me 7 years, and this is one of many reasons why I am qualified to be your next taxpayer's treasurer, is that there are 100 local pension funds in Massachusetts. There's the state fund, which is about $121 billion, but there are a lot of these little local funds. We did an analysis and learned that over the 35-year period of our local fund, we had lost $10 million in investment returns because our local fund had higher expenses and lower returns. So again, I worked for 7 years to finally get our fund fully invested in the state fund, because if we get better returns, then our retirees are protected and our taxpayers don't have to make up that difference.
Right.
But I didn't work for 7 years to fully invest in the state system just to turn around and have the governor try to raid it.
Right.
And the reason she's raiding it, there's two reasons. First of all, spending's out of control. She has done nothing to rein in the state budget, which has grown significantly under her watch. But the second reason is Massachusetts has a terrible business environment right now. Businesses are not coming here, and established businesses are leaving. And they're leaving not because the governor can't throw money at her favorite businesses. They're leaving because we are overregulated and we're too expensive. So the way to fix this is not to raid the pension fund. It's not to take hard-earned money from taxpayers and from state retirees. It's to get a pencil out and tighten the belt of the state budget. There is plenty of money in the state budget. If she wants to throw money at her cronies, fine.
Right.
But do not raid the state pension fund to do it.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Dion. She's running for state treasurer. If people want to get involved with your campaign, how do they do that, Elizabeth?
Thank you for asking. We need involvement. Please go to my website, which is votedion.com, votedionne.com. Sign up to volunteer, sign up to receive our notices, and most importantly, please donate in any amount. This is a winnable race. We just got incredible survey data back. The treasurer has a terrible record, mm-hmm. and when we educate voters about her record, I beat her easily. But we have to raise the money to get this message out. And again, it is time to return affordability and transparency to Beacon Hill, and that is why I'm running.
Elizabeth, one of the other jobs in the Treasury is a huge office. They oversee the lottery. But one of the other things is she appoints people to the Cannabis Control Commission. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, she no longer appoints people to the Cannabis Control Commission.
Why is that?
Because she did such a terrible job. For 9 years, the Cannabis Control Commission was chaos. We have small businesses closing. I think 30 have closed and another 30 are in receivership because she did such a terrible job. She did such a bad job with the Cannabis Control Commission that her entire party voted to take it away from her. It was 155-0 in the House, and I think only one Democrat supported her in the Senate. That is phenomenal to have your entire party vote to say that you did a terrible job. I have never seen that before. So the Cannabis Control Commission is now appointed by the governor, but we still are going to hold Deb Goldberg accountable for the chaos, for the harm that she did to small businesses, for the harm that she did to employees. There was a woman who died in January of 2022, Lorna McMurray, and that was a direct result of the treasurer meddling and not allowing good work to go forward. Also, public health suffered because the Cannabis Control Commission didn't implement the safety standards that we had promised. When voters adopted to legalize cannabis in 2017, the state made a number of promises about economic development and about public safety. Under Deb Goldberg's leadership, if you can call it that, none of those promises were upheld. And it's because she again and again meddled in the inner workings of the Cannabis Control Commission. And in particular, I've used the word crony a lot. Mm-hmm. She installed a crony of hers named Sean Collins, who didn't have the credentials and was pretty dirty. And there are a number of whistleblowers who are pointing back to him. And he suppressed a lot of information. But now that he's out of the Cannabis Control Commission, there are multiple investigations going on.
Speaking with Elizabeth Dion, she's looking to be the treasurer of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. How's the campaign trail going so far, Elizabeth?
It's going so well. I can't tell you the number of Democrats who are quietly supporting me, including up on Beacon Hill, in the Senate, in the legislature, because she is the most incompetent treasurer this state has ever had. And the words that people use are shocking. I am quoting. These are words that Democrats use, that she's despicable, her behavior is despicable, that they detest, they despise. I mean, these are strong words. These are not my words. These are words, I don't know her. I know what she's done. But people who know her, she is deeply, deeply unpopular in her own party. And this is absolutely a seat on Beacon Hill that the taxpayers can rally and take back. And again, the treasurer also has a direct impact on affordability. The reason that there's so many override requests right now is because state aid has not kept up with inflation.
Right.
The state budget has doubled, while local aid's only gone up 25%. But the single largest source of local aid is the lottery, which, again, revenues are falling. She's not managing it well. Every single department, there are 12 departments that she oversees, every single one has problems. And I want to go back to where we started.
Sure.
Voters need to be scared, very scared, about what's going on with the pension fund. It's $121 billion. If we let the governor take $100 million now, it won't stop there. This is too tempting. It's too big a pot of money. Taxpayers need to pay attention to this. And again, I want to thank the unions for shining a light on this and making sure that we all know about the governor's attempted grab of these sacred pension funds.
Well, speaking with Elizabeth Dion, what's remarkable to me is that unions that traditionally support Democrats are so aggressive in pushing back against Mara Healey and Kim Driscoll's plan. Goldberg is obviously involved in it as well. That's really remarkable that SEIU and the government employees, the other government employees unit,
NAGE. So I am pro-worker. Mm-hmm. And in particular, during my 10 years of local government work in Belmont, I just stepped down when my term ended from the select board in April. So I'm now just a full-time candidate. But I saw day in, day out, what our frontline workers did. They were the interface between government and the public, and they showed up every day wanting to solve problems. They were mission-driven. And, you know, if on top of the fact the governor's trying to raid the pension funds, the retirement board is now denying full benefits to Department of Correction workers, which again is appalling. In all the years that I worked to reform pensions in Belmont, it was never, ever about cutting pensions. I always said those pensions are sacred. Mm-hmm. It's a promise we made. This is the only money these people have to retire on. If we're going to solve the pension problem, it shouldn't be on the back of Department of Correction employees. It should be by capping the amount of pensions that can go out so that people who are making $200,000, $300,000 a year in pensions, that's where we look. It's not the frontline workers who have worked for decades serving the public and serving the state and have no Social Security to retire on. That is wrong.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Dion. Of course, I've interviewed Elizabeth before, and we had lunch with her, myself, Sheriff Hodgson, Lenny Mills, Chris Medeiros, Hank Turgeon. We all got together at Inner Bay. So I know a lot about Elizabeth. I find her to be a remarkable candidate. One thing you probably don't know about her, but I'm going to tell you now, is her dad was a state senator in California and worked very closely with the then governor, Ronald Reagan. Can you reflect on that?
Oh, sure. So I get asked, how long have I been a Republican? And my response is, I was born a Republican. So my father, John Harmer, was leader of the California Senate Republicans from 67 to 75, and I was born in the middle of that. Why that mattered was the Republicans were the minority. And so Dad had to work really hard in a bipartisan way to get Ronald Reagan's legislative agenda through the California Senate. And Dad was very successful. He was so successful that when Reagan's lieutenant governor had to resign, Reagan appointed my dad to complete that term. So they had a very close relationship. Dad talked about Reagan. They would fly together all over the state. Reagan had entire chapters of the New Testament memorized. Wow. He had read deeply in political theory, political philosophy, and political science. So when Reagan became president, people dismissed him as an intellectual lightweight, which was as far from the truth as you could get. He was deeply, deeply informed. But he was kind of like Abraham Lincoln. He was very happy to have the opposition underestimate him. You know, if you say, underestimate me, that'll be fun. Reagan was really happy to have them underestimate him because he had no ego about this. He was all about getting the job done. He was all about serving the public. So if they underestimated him and that made it easier for him to get wins for the taxpayers, great. So, yeah, just a remarkable, remarkable man.
Elizabeth, I really appreciate you sharing that personal experience with us, as well as blowing the alarm for this outrageous scheme. Thank you so much. Good luck on the campaign trail. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Bye. Elizabeth Dion, we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Play.
Welcome back to the program. Again, I want to thank Elizabeth Dion from Belmont, who's running to be the Republican treasurer of the state of Massachusetts. Really interesting article.